What's up, everybody? David Pollack here of See Ball, Get Ball podcast. I hope you like it, man. Be sure to follow the show wherever you subscribe, YouTube, or any of your other platforms. Welcome into See Ball, Get Ball. I'm your host, David Pollack. Brent Rollins joining me as always, writes for Rivals. Obviously, Brent and PFF, but the different PFF, Pro Football Focus, not Pollack Family Foundation. Yes, we had our ninth. So there's a lot to talk about. We're going to get to a bunch of different things. Michigan suspends their head coach again. Donald Trump weighs in on how to fix NIL in college football, which is interesting. And then Tease. We're supposed to tease these. A big time commitment landed in the quarterback class of 2026. Yep. But first, Brent, we had the Pollack Family Foundation golf tournament today, and we got some superlatives. We did it the other day with the Chick-fil-A and the honor. I actually talked to Kirby about that, by the way. One of the things I talked to Kirby about was like, hey, I'll play in that thing with you next year if you want to go win that thing and drop some tanks. And he was like, that's not how it works. It's ex-coaches that get to play. And I was like, dang it, man. Okay. Thanks to Kirby.
He quickly went correction, like very functional and, you know, logistics and corrected you, right? He's like, no,
yes,
you can't do that.
Yes. Kirby's a trip, man. Kirby's a great dude. But we do this. We go to this tournament every year, and we have a bunch of guys that come in from all over the place. And it's always fun, man, to watch the different personalities. And the winner for the day, we got to give props to, as much as I don't want to do this because I play pickleball with him, I work out with him, and he's like an annoying little brother, Jake Fromm. Jake Fromm, they took the dub. His team won the tournament. Freshly fired Jake Fromm. He got fired the other day. That's the only reason he could come. I texted him, Brent. I texted Jake and I said, hey, I heard your schedule kind of cleared up for Monday. I texted him last week.
Shame on you. The Lions. Well, not shame on you, but still, I mean, I get that.
Hey, the Lions,
by the way, he's hyper competitive.
He is.
No matter what he's doing. Competitive.
Yeah. And I was like, the Lions, you know, the Lions cut you. So it's, hey, let's play some golf for some charity. And he did, so he deserves the prize. Congratulations, Jake! Way to finish this time. Good job. Where do you want me to go next, superlative wise? Would you like me to go most interesting? Would you like me to go longest hitters?
Okay, let's go there because you've been bragging on your drives. I don't know if you participated, but so who was the longest driver of the group of the
okay
of
so,
those that joined?
Well, first of all, Jake can crush it. Got to give him credit. Jeff Francoeur can hammer a golf ball. Absolutely destroy a golf ball. And this is
not
a surprise.
Shocking, by the way.
No, yeah. All the guys at the long ball, all the guys that can smash, former baseball guys. Like, they just, yeah, they know how to put their hips into the ball. And Chipper Jones, absolute stud, can knock the pee out of the ball. And then Gunnar Stockton, like, those three guys, man, they just the ball when you watch them, the ball just kind of jumps off the club and you're like, golly, it just keeps going. And so their power was pretty fun. And the biggest smart aleck, like covert, like if you didn't know it, you just got slapped upside your face, was fantastic, was Marcus Allen. Marcus Allen,
really?
Was so hilarious. Like, just he would drop, you know, quick quips, and he would let you know really quickly. Like, he played with a couple of my buddies, and just the one-liners, the quick wit was absolutely outstanding. And deadpan, Marcus never changes from this. Like,
yeah,
as chill, as even keel as it gets. But he was really, really cool and really slight. Most interesting fact I learned today. How about this?
Okay.
Sammy Brown from Clemson. Okay.
Yeah.
Linebacker, elite
Jefferson,
linebacker.
Georgia.
I mean, right down the road from Jefferson, unbelievable kid, lefty. Those are cool things. Big, strong sucker, can hit a tank. He squatted 545 12 times this offseason. 12.
12 is in more than 10, as in a number after the one.
A dozen, yes.
Wow. He's
545 12 times. Like, he's Brent.
I'm officially impressed by that.
Dude, he's 6'3", 6'4", and stacked. I mean, put together, like looks like, I mean, he just doesn't look like a human. Like he definitely,
and he's also on your hype team. He's a Clemson Tiger, which is your team already. So
All in.
Good things.
Hey, he played with Pastor Jay, my pastor, who's a diehard LSU fan. And I said, week one, we'll find out which Tiger's the best. Like, we'll find out which Death Valley's the best. What an awesome showdown, week one, Clemson versus LSU. Another most interesting that I absolutely love. There's Sammy, by the way. Look at that big sucker. I mean, he is huge.
All in
for the Tiger. See, brother.
He makes you look like you need to do a few more reps in the upper body there.
And lower,
Just in the trap.
Upper and lower. So how about this? We stroll up on one cart, former national champion this past year, and Caleb Downs, he's there. And I said, Caleb, I said, last year, man, you were reading a book. You're not reading a book this year? Oh, no, I got my book. He goes into the cart, and he pulls out his book. And I was like, well, what are you reading? And it was, here's a shot for Caleb.
That's not bad.
It went right, by the way. I made $100.
Not terrible.
I did make $100 winning the long drive. His dad, Gary, comes every year. Phenomenal human being, still in ridiculous shape, by the way. He played in the NFL.
Would you rather read or play golf?
But so, Caleb, I was like, no book? And he goes, he goes in the cart and he pulls it out. And it's Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Oh,
and I was like,
Kawasaki guy.
Yeah, I was like, you're reading that? And he was like, absolutely. And I was, underlining, taking notes, he's just an impressive kid, man. I mean, so impressive, so likable. Again, he's put together and just a good dude and so interesting. The most courageous I had to write down was Danny Werfel, full gator lid in Georgia territory.
Blue and orange.
I mean, full gator. Like he was like, I had to do it. And I was like, I love it, Danny. I love that you walk. But he's also one of the great dudes, man. Desire Street and what he does with his foundation and his charity. He's just a super dude. Brought his son.
Is he any good at golf?
Do what?
Is Danny any good at golf?
I do not know, but I played in his pickle tournament last year, his pickleball tournament. And I can promise you this, he's nasty on the pickleball court. Straight nasty. I bet he's great at golf too. Tavares King, wide receiver for Georgia, also brought his son, which was awesome. He was running from hole to hole. He was five. He was a tiny little sucker, but it was outstanding. But no, thank you to all those guys, man, that came. We raised a ton of money, and it's a fun tournament. It's Brent, you will be fed and you will drink and you will eat and eat some more and eat some more. We had Killer Crust Pizza. We had Chick-fil-A sandwiches. We had barbecue from Tanner Hill Barbecue with Oconee Gold, of course. I mean, we fed you the whole entire round. Like homemade chips and salsa. Like it was there we go. The homemade chips and salsa, making them on the course right there. Like the salsa they made like 12 gallons. Yep, and Cherie made it. Cherie and Miss Tracy made awesome. It. So it was a good day, man. It was a great day, a lot of fun. And thank you to those guys that joined. And then now we can jump in some more college football if you want. Some fun
stuff. Well, I mean, speaking of college football, you were there and you said you talked to Kirby. And I think there were probably some other Georgia people, sort of representatives there. I would assume so. That's one where my day job gets in the way of actually doing any of this stuff. But independent of that, they had some big news today. And 2026 five-star QB Jared Curtis committed earlier this evening to Georgia, which I think, based on my looking back, I think is Kirby's fifth five-star. Now, he's obviously in this world, ultimately still has to sign.
I'm about to say, that's a long way to go.
That's a long way, but, you know, he did say he's 100% committed.
So let's see. Jake Fromm, Jacob Eason, Justin Fields.
Yep.
Carson
another
Beck.
Local, no, no,
no. Carson Beck.
Local product. Star.
Local JT kid. Daniel?
I mean, well, technically, I get he wasn't really signed out of high school, but.
Yeah, but he counts. He was a five-star, wasn't he?
Yes, he was a five-star, but I was thinking more local, down the street from us.
Brock Vandegrift.
Vandegrift, yes. Yeah. So, and then now, you know, you look back, Stetson as the no star.
And he's got two championships.
And then Carson Beck. as the others. Current room, Gunner, Stockton, Ryan Puglisi, both were right around like 200 in terms of rivals ranking. And then Ryan Montgomery, the freshman's right around 71st. But they've got a lot of QBs. But, you know, all right, let's I'd rather hear the commentary about from the golf tournament, given that that decision was upcoming this afternoon from him. If there
Mike
was any.
Mike Bobo said, Mike Bobo was on the tee, and the comment was, today we'll decide, there's Mike, there's Coach Bobo signing a ball. I think today will determine the rest of my spring is what the comment was. Like, you know, just I've heard a lot about this kid, Brent, and listen, it's recruiting. It's always an interesting topic. You always hear what you want to hear from coaches a lot of times, but he sounds like the real deal. I mean, he sounds like he's supposed to be Mr. Do It All, which I think, you know, listen, if you're watching college football, well, that
I think is a big,
listen, we've talked about this, Brent. If I'm building a recruiting class and if I'm signing quarterbacks, and listen, the part about that is if you go through, you know, if you go through that list of guys, those five stars, the one that Kirby hit out of the park that everybody loved that was finally mobile was Justin Fields, and Justin didn't get it done. And you can say what you want. He couldn't beat out Jake Fromm, and Ohio State's offense was different. They used his athletic ability, and it was made it easier on him, and he looked a lot better. But Stetson Bennett was a freak. He was a great athlete. Yeah. He didn't get a lot of credit, and look what Georgia did with him. So Georgia having a guy like that can create with his feet, I think that could be big time. And, you know, 100% committed, like you said. There's Paige.
Which is interesting because the kid initially committed to Georgia, then decommitted and sort of opened his recruitment for a while and then is now 100% committed. So we'll see. But, you know, one of the things I had posted this stat, I think earlier in the offseason, I was trying to find it, but I couldn't pull it up real quick. But something along the lines of about 25% of five-star QBs, say, since like Trevor Lawrence, or maybe I think I went back like 7-8 years at least, but only about 25% actually stay with the school they sign with and finish out their career there. And a couple of those are current, like Arch is one of those that's currently with the school they sign with. But it's, I mean, it used to be coin flip. It's even more so, like, well, now it's even worse than a coin flip.
Went multiple places. Right. Yeah. Like that was the guy that was playing in front of him. I mean, those guys, I tell you what, those guys, like you said, don't hit at a high rate and they're going to leave. Like they're going to leave if they don't play early. And here's the thing with this five-star stuff, with this NIL stuff, like these guys got a hit. And we saw with the draft, 20 something players of the 32 were five-star kids. Like talent ultimately wins. Yep.
It was 4 and 5 stars. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, talent wins, right? Like the upper echelon of guys are the ones with those measurables and those elite traits obviously win when they put it together. But a lot of times how they put it together, when they put it together, isn't. Justin Fields is a good example of that. Like it's not always right away. And if it's not right away at your school, they're going to leave. If a 3-star guy beats him out, if a younger guy beats him out, like they're bye-bye. Like bye, Felicia. They gone. They're going to go because they're going to go get bread somewhere else. They're going to go get paid. Yep. Another great deal to go somewhere else and compete. So, yeah, it doesn't – I don't think you go, oh, man, we got our guy. Like, there's always things that go with it and decisions that are made and rosters that are going to be poached all across the country.
So, we're at least – so, Kirby, Bubba, all the, they were at least maybe just, okay, it is what it is and the kid picks who he picks, or were they feeling pretty good about it early in the day?
They don't give up their hand very well. They do a good job. They go a good job of poker face.
Poker face.
Yeah, the best way to find something like that out is Buster Faulkner was there. You ask a guy that's not recruiting him. Like, you know, you're like, hey, Buster. And Buster, he's so cool. His son plays for my high school team that I coach at. And great kid, Harrison. Harrison. Hey, by the way, Buster Faulkner and Harrison Faulkner, there is one duo in the history of high school football, father-son, that quarterbacks have won state championships. That's them.
They
are one of one. Buster and Harrison. So there's Buster in the video. Good job, Wes. Wes is killing this today. Look at this dude.
Yeah.
but I mean, so think about that, dude. There's one duo that has ever done
father,
that.
Son.
That's pretty dang exciting. And I almost hit, Wes can confirm, I almost hit Buster and he was almost out for the first game because I drove the green and I hit, like he said, like 5 feet from him. And you should see him so calm, cool, collected from it. Didn't even phase him. I mean, he did step on my ball right there. Did you see that, Brent? He stepped on it.
I did. So if you drive the green, are you saying four? Because that's kind of not really a out of the way thing, right? That's the you're actually aiming there, and you just happen to hit it really far.
Yeah, I mean, to get to this one, you had to go over the trees a significant amount. So, I mean, we yelled four. They said they yelled four about when it was landing. But, I mean, you're like, wait a minute, is that going to get there? I mean, you don't know. I mean, that's a poke. But,
Good job by you.
Well, the drive. That one was a lucky one. Let's go. Where are we going next, baby?
I say it wasn't all good in terms of news and positive of the day because – in the northern part of the country in Michigan. It's a self-imposed two-game suspension for Michigan head coach Sharon Moore as a part of the Connor Stallions sort of still stuff, amazingly, that's still going on. And now you look at and interestingly enough, when you see that, the word self-imposed, what does that tell you? Like that to me is just jumps off the page that, hey, we're going to self-impose a two-game suspension on our coach.
That means you got caught with your hand directly in the cookie jar. Like the video was on and your hand's like this and the lights are off and you snuck in the kitchen and you're like this when the lights came on. Whoops. Like, you know, cause again, the NCAA has no subpoena power. So they can't, like, you can do whatever you want and it doesn't really matter because unless they have, like, the concrete evidence that someone has given them, they can't subpoena you and you can just be like this. Okay, the NCAA, hold on, it's the NCAA. Hey, guys, you know, hey, we want to ask you a few questions about X. Kick rocks. What? No, we want to ask you about Y. Eat it. Yeah, beat it. See you. Peace. Like, I mean, I think that's the problem with people understanding, like, it's not an easy thing for them to get the information because they can't go get phone records. They can't go do X, Y, and Z. And so that means they had pretty concrete evidence. And they have,
but it's also hey, we're going to do this now and do two games. So NCAA, when you actually make your decision, I think it's supposed to happen like officially before the beginning of the year. Take into account these things that we've already done and we've already said, so you don't need to do it anymore or give any more games. Which, by the way, did you see the two games with which they were going to – I don't know if you were too busy today to see that, but it was weeks 3 and 4. That
what? Wait a minute. They picked their games?
Yes. It's a self-imposed suspension for weeks 3 and 4, which is Central Michigan and Nebraska, not week 1 against New Mexico or week 2 at Oklahoma, which is Sharon Moore's alma mater.
By the way, how disrespectful is that to Nebraska?
Nebraska, yes.
Like, hey, Nebraska,
we want to play New Mexico. That.
Like, we need our coach from New Mexico more than we need it on the road at Nebraska. Like, that's weird to me, bro. Like, we're at home against New Mexico. We're at home against Central Michigan. Why would you not pick those two games? There's no way they picked that.
I guess they had to do one of significance and maybe one of insignificance a little bit.
I mean, there had to be something going on there. Like, they picked one and you picked one. But either way, hey, Sharon Moore, by the way, interesting stat. He's filled in for Harbaugh 4 times. Because of suspensions, which is crazy to think about. Like, as soon as I thought about this, I'm like, dang, he's been the guy that has filled in for Jim against Penn State in a victory, against Ohio State. He beat Ohio State, remember, in victory. So those are crucial wins in Michigan's undefeated national championship season. Like, he was big time huge for them. Michigan last year obviously was 8-5. It was a good 8-5. Can I say that? Like, honest to goodness, is
well, I mean they beat the national champion.
Yeah, but do you agree? Like, it was a really
given
good
how bad they were on offense. Yeah, given how
yeah,
bad
I
they
mean,
were on offense.
They played Brent Rollins at quarterback. Like, they tried everybody on the roster multiple times. I mean, their defense was good. The draft, obviously, you watch, and there's so many guys, you know, 10 plus guys that got drafted from Michigan. So it's crazy, but it was kind of crazy to watch them go 8-5 because they were so great in close games and found a way to get it done. So it was a good 8-5, and Sherrone Moore 4-0 as an interim coach. And I guess now, you know, looking for some more luck in that department. Next
lovely stat, by the way. I don't know who this is, but I saw Justin Spiro host the show. The last two Michigan head coaches have been suspended 5 times in 1.5 years. That's like you said, and all like Mentor, and then the other assistant had already sort of kind of. It's just, by the way, did you ever actually get to comment in any way on all this stuff with Connor Stallions and the sign stealing and any of that? Because I think you may have been not a part of the world of media at that point in time when all that was going on.
Fired. Nice way of saying fired. Thank you, Brent. Well,
I didn't say that.
I guess that ain't going away. No, I mean, I watched the documentary.
That was the other question I had. Did you watch the documentary?
I did. I wasn't overly impressed, honestly. Like I was kind of like, okay, I want to know more. You know, I think, and listen, that's your job, to make money and to make a documentary. And they did a good job, and everybody probably watched it. It was very successful, but there was a lot of left out that I want to know. Like, that's bull crap. Like, there was a lot of, that wasn't me on the sidelines. Yeah, that was. Like, we can see that was you. I kind of wanted to know a little bit more about how they went on the road and videoed signs with other people, and apparently, and they denied it. They didn't do it. So, I think I was left like, I don't think you're telling the truth. I would love to know a little bit more detail, but I was very interested when he broke down the signals and stuff, and how he kind of studied tape of the signals. And, you know, if you think about it, man, I'm just telling you, as a person who has stolen signs before in a game, I'm not going to tell you which level, and it's, I guess, allegedly maybe stole signs in a game. It's a hard thing to do, man. Like, it's very, like, you have to be able to process and really think abstractly. And then to think about all the detail, Brent, that went into filming, pairing, piecing, like, okay, this didn't work, trial and error, patience. Like, dude, it's a lot.
It's a full-time job. Yeah. I mean, it's legit a full-time job. And it's one of those where, now, if you do have it and it's actually real and legit, I'd say that's a pretty big deal. And I think it played a quite significant role in some of the things that they did throughout that time frame. But yeah, think back to with youth league stuff and numbers on a wristband and people watching our games and being like, hey, we know what that is. And then, all right, we got to change the wristband up because people come and scout and do all that sort of stuff. So
we actually had a guy, we scheduled a game with a person with another team, and they came to our game the week before with a camcorder. And this is,
I remember this.
We were 12U. And I'm not going to mention the name of the school or the guy, Richard Watkins Prince. I'm not going to do that because I would never mention that. No. But literally came to our game as 12U, recorded it.
They were eighth graders, by the way. And they were eighth graders.
Yeah, they were eighth graders. Slash ninth graders, slash 10th graders. Recorded our game and our plays to know what was going on to try to beat us. Like, that's incredible. You know what that is? That is a tip of the cap, sir. That is a, we respect you a lot. Like, but anyways, I digress. More sign stealing. Just me and Brent were coaching at the same time, by the way. Brent was the offensive coordinator. So
yes. Oh, well, we would have needed a lot more. We needed a lot of this to win that game, actually, because of just the physical mismatch, but that would be luck. And when you recent article, Bill Connolly, who writes for ESPN.com, looked at sort of who were the luckiest and unluckiest teams in three specific areas a season ago. And it's fascinating to look at some of these numbers that he put out, and I'm going to go through some of them. So, like, turnovers. Turnovers are always, it's kind of a random thing. When you think about the ball in and of itself, how it bounces. Like, I think back to
how even it's shaped. It's a weird-shaped football that's never going to bounce the way. This is not a basketball that you throw it and it skips. Like, it has to – you have to get fortunate sometimes.
Well, I mean, you think back, like, even in the SEC championship game, Georgia had one fumble that I remember bounced right back into somebody's gut. I think it was. And then another one that three Texas guys were staring at, and Arian Smith just fought for it basically. And
how about Gunnar Stockton getting knocked out cold? And I told him today, I said, I don't know how you held that football. I said, wait a minute. I said, you don't either. Like, and you still don't know because you don't remember it probably because he was knocked out cold. Hey, I don't know if I told this on the pod or not. He was in concussion protocol for the next 7 days and did absolutely nothing. Like,
and no, you didn't tell that.
Huh?
No, you hadn't said that. That's.
I mean, that dude was out. Like, that dude was gone. Like, he would not have taken another snap. I mean, that would not. He would not have been in that football game. That was the end, obviously, because they could win it. But he, because they ran the football the next play with him out. But so that, I mean, the fact that he held onto that football, that was another one that was crazy to me in that game. They missed a bunch of field goals. Texas did in that game too, right? Yep. I mean, that's the. They also the interception right before the half with Carson Beck. I thought they could have scored on that too if the guy would have not cut back. Like he kind of cut back at the last second with no time. I think he could have he had a chance to walk in. Anyways, all the what-ifs, could-haves, should-haves, didn't.
Yeah, but so Indiana, Clemson, Iowa State, Georgia were sort of some of the luckiest teams in terms of turnovers, some of the unluckiest. And a lot of – and what he's doing is looking at sort of what you should have turnover-wise versus what you actually did, and a lot of just taking out some of the noise and the randomness of things. Auburn was really bad in terms of unlucky, like just bouncing the wrong way for them. The other thing he looked at was one-score games.
Yeah.
So those games
– those are always the best to me. Those are good indications because here's the thing. That absolutely is going to do this. You are not going to always be great in one-score games. Like – if you are good, that's one thing. But like Arkansas State being 7-1 in one score games, like that's not going to happen again. You can write it down. You can take a picture. Like it's just they were the best in the country at it. Iowa State. Every time the Iowa game, like every game, shoot, every time you looked up, they were
5-1.
They were 5-1 finding a way. Now listen, some people could say this. Well, Rocco Beck was a stud when he needed to be, and they made plays, and I'll take that, but. It also takes a little bit of luck. Like you win those some year and then other years you're like, dang it. We were Ole Miss, right? Like Ole Miss didn't trail. They trailed for 27 seconds versus LSU. I think the whole game, like Kentucky, they had a great chance to have that game. Ole Miss barely trailed all last year and had three losses. Like that's just what, and if they win one of those, Brent, one,
they're in the playoff.
They're in the college football playoff, and everybody in Oxford's going nuts, bananas, jacked up, excited.
Yep. Michigan was 5-1, by the way, in one-score games, which is amazing considering they were 8-5. So they won the close games that they had. Syracuse was 7-2 in one-score games. So they're like – and when we look at this, it's like, okay, if you're
they
on one
edge
wins,
of the corner. And they were 7-2 in one-score games. Like,
yep.
That's freaking incredible. Like, that is – And here's what gets frustrated people with that. Syracuse fans are excited. First 10-win season. Like they were just in it like they're so good. Transfer portal. And now like it has to come down. I mean, it just does because of like you played 9 games that were one score games. 9 and you won 7. Like that's great coaching and great preparation and all that stuff. And it's getting very fortunate.
Yes. Some on the other side of that, USC was 4-5 in one score games.
Yeah, they got LSU early.
they had the lead in the fourth quarter, I think, in like what 5 of their losses. So Alabama was 2-3 in one score games. And then Auburn was 1-3 in one score games. Auburn, hey, by the way, there's a theme here.
Go back to Bama real quick.
Yeah.
Like when you really think about that Vanderbilt game, like
They dominated the game.
They averaged 9 yards a play. Yep. They
completely dominated.
They went 4-for-4 in the red zone, like for touchdowns. It was crazy. Vandy averaged like 5 yards a play. Their expected win percentage in that Bama Vandy game was almost 99%. Like, and again, you're going more numbers, probability, all this stuff. I don't know what it means, which is what I do a lot of times too. I'm like, I don't care who won the game. Basically, it just tells you, man, like a tipped pass, interception, return for a touchdown, a fumble that, again, like you described, it hung there for a while. You know, Vandy falls on it. Like it sometimes it takes those, and I would say especially nowadays in college football, the more that everybody starts to even out, and I'm not saying everybody's even talent-wise, but the more it has done this, the more those breaks matter. And it's usually those are the crazy things that happen a lot of times that get you beat, that you look back and you're like, are you freaking kidding me? You watch the tape as a coach and you're like, really? Like, this bull crap. We worked so hard to do X, Y, and Z, and we're so much better all over the field. And then that happens. Like, that's just not fun.
All right. One new thing that you need to do on Twitter each X, however you say it, each week is look at Parker Fleming on his account, Stats O War. Because he does a thing, did we get beat that bad every week? And he does it in picture form, by the way, for those of you that don't want to just look at the numbers. But it's basically how, in terms of yards per play difference versus what the actual outcome was. How much, and it's much like you're talking about with Alabama and Vanderbilt. Did you actually, like, hey, we dominated the game, but we actually lost the game, and it's graphical every week. And it's like, hey, maybe we actually got lucky here or we didn't get lucky. But the other thing that I think is one that is very relevant when it comes to this season is injuries. And that was the last sort of piece that Connelly looked at in his piece, was most lineup consistency. And look at the teams that had the most lineup consistency: Penn State, Indiana, Texas, and of the top 10, Texas, Tennessee, Oregon. Like, five of the top 10 in the playoff just didn't necessarily have to deal with the injury bug. Versus some other ends of that spectrum, Georgia was actually 99th in that. And the biggest one of all these, Florida. Florida was 132nd out of like 134 FBS teams in this consistency metric.
And still won eight games, right?
And was the only one out of the bottom, like 15 or 20, that had a winning record. So if, for those of you that, you know, all this, you got a longer season, you've got, you know, by the way, you don't have the extra practice guys there, your numbers are going to be down. Like, injuries are going to be a humongous deal, I think, this season.
And managing those, like, talking to all these coaches, man, you know, all these guys are just talking about, like, they're looking at NFLs. Like, NFL, NFL, NFL. And I say that because they have to manage the longer seasons. They have to manage less depth. The portal obviously takes a hit with your depth, because you used to have five-star guys that were going to stay and get developed while they learned the system. Nah, bro. Like, if they don't play for a year, they're gone. So it's a harder job than ever to make that come to life too. So it's lucky, right? Like, it's you have to get fortunate to some injuries are more preventable than others. And, you know, I would argue some people too leave their starters in the game more than others. You know, that's another thing. More hits and the totality of hits is really what starts to add up. But injuries, and listen, obviously my NFL career ended with an injury, but it's the worst part of sports. It's my least favorite part, because it's not fair a lot of times, and it sucks, you know, and it takes away so much of what you build. Like, when you get an injury,
personally had to deal with that this year.
Huh?
I've personally had to deal with that this year with my kids.
Yeah.
It's terrible, and it's random.
But the thing is, it's when it happens, it's also not created equally. When it happens to certain positions, it affects everything. I mean, nowadays you get your quarterback hurt, like, okay, good luck. I mean, it's really tough to replace when you build a system around one guy's strengths, weaknesses, abilities, and then he's gone. Like, it's just that all those reps with receivers, that's out the window, right? Because the twos don't get the same reps. And so that's definitely something that it's involved in. And I love looking at those things. We should look at those things more during the season.
In terms of the turnaround candidates that he identified, by the way, so he identified four primary ones. Auburn, because I mentioned them a couple times already. Florida, especially with the injury part. Florida State, because I guess it just couldn't get anywhere. It's only nowhere to go but up for them in terms of turnaround. And then Utah as the four sort of turnaround teams. Who are you banking on out of that group to take a sort of
Someone said in the X comments that FSU was unlucky. Were they unlucky or were they bad? They would say it needs more luck. They were bad. No. Like, let's not take this argument and take a team with two wins. This is more for teams that were very competitive, that were in the mix, that were not Ungood. Okay, I'm going to use my best yes. Reese Davis. By the way, Reese Davis flew in for the tournament too, and he was fantastic and awesome. Unbelievable. Thank you for coming, Reese. But ungood is the best. It's the best way I've ever heard to describe someone like really that really stinks badly in a nice context. So you said Utah, FSU,
Florida, and Auburn.
Auburn. I think Auburn has a real chance to flip the script and be more competitive. Auburn was close in games. They were on the unlucky side, obviously, like yep. we talk about. But I also think that I think they have to get better at quarterback, and I think they got so much better at wide receiver. And I think they have a few quarterback candidates that really fit Hugh Freeze and what he likes to do. So I think they take a jump because, listen, Auburn's defense was really good, man. Like, they were not bad last year. Their offense just kind of cost them. And, I mean, you talk about games that one of the most improbable losses last year, Auburn to OU.
Yes, like, that game.
I don't know if that was on the list, but I just remember watching that game going, how the freak did you screw that one up? Like, I was really feeling bad for Auburn because I'm like, how many different ways can they lose early in the season? Like, they were inventing them. It was impressive how many ways they were finding to lose. So I think Auburn would be a team. Auburn's a team that I would put the most stock in if I'm picking one of those.
Yeah. Florida's interesting.
Florida was 8-6.
Their improvement might be minimal and they still be really good win loss improvement might be minimal, but they're actually a lot better team.
Stinks, man. Gosh dang. Florida's schedule, they could be really, really good. And it's just 8-6 might be the ceiling. I mean, as well as they've played and as much as they were hurt last year and guys that you talked about on that list, it's still a tough ask for Florida this year.
So we'll get to all those as we preview the conferences and the entire country, I guess, over the summer. Last but not least, we had a bit of presidential, I guess, intervention or try to, maybe. President Trump mentioned something that, hey, I'm going to get with Saban and, you know, kind of fix NIL and what I don't know exactly. I can't remember the exact quote, but I know he spoke at the Alabama commencement speech. Both of them did. So Saban spoke as well as then President Trump. So what's your thoughts here? Is our current El Presidente here? Is he going to take care of all this too? Has he got an idea for that? I mean, who knows?
The guy that can fix it is Nick Saban. The guy he's meeting with is the guy that can fix it. That's who I want to fix it. Listen, everybody knows NIL's broken. Like, there's not a coach in America that doesn't know NIL's broken. It's absolutely broken. The system needs more accountability for players, for coaches together. Like, both of them to have accountability, to have more rules, more guardrails to protect the sport, to protect the stuff that's going. We could go through the offseason with the Nico and his brother and that. Like, all we could go down a litany of stuff to prove that and why you should fix it. Nick Saban lived it. Like, he was in it. Yeah. He retired because of it.
He left because of it. Yeah, at least he says he did.
The kid's walking into his office and being like, I want a raise or I'm leaving. And, like, to build a roster, he understands that inside and out. Like, he would be such a great person to fix it. I don't know how Trump, you know, it stays involved in this, but I love that. Here's the thing. I love that he's talking about it because the more we talk about it, the better. The more that we continue to try to push. I don't like being one of those people, Brent, that go, it sucks. It's terrible. I don't know how to fix it.
Yeah, like, I hate the solution.
That. Yeah. I mean, Nick Saban can fix it. Like, past coaches in this era can fix it. Like, coaches that are at smaller schools that are suffering the consequences of this can fix it. Like, more eyeballs, yeah. More attention. So if Trump is saying that, I think Trump has more important things to worry about. Me personally, I think we got a litany of stuff going on in our country that needs a lot of attention. And yes. I would love to see those addressed, but, like, I love that we're bringing eyeballs to it, man, because, I mean, Brent, you don't like the system. You're a football guy. Do you like the system we're living in?
No. I mean, I've sort of written about some of my own, what I think could be solutions, but I will say for me, just seeing that, because I saw the clip of Nick Saban talking about three life lessons that he shared for the Alabama graduates, and him speaking, and it has the president of the United States seal in front of him on the podium. It just was like, kind of fits. Kind of fits.
And
Nick's, he'd be anytime he talks, and when he,
did we do that? By the way, did we do that one? Did we do the show of when they talk, I listen?
I mean, he's one of them.
That needs to be Wednesday's show, because for years, like, listening to Nick talk about the process, like, it's just enjoyable. It's enjoyable to hear him speak. It's enjoyable to hear him give a commencement speech. It's only three things. It's like a minute and 20 seconds, but it's worth it. Like, it makes you better. Like, it literally, you'll save it in your bookmarks if you do those things. It's just something
that's what I mean.
But, like, we should do that Wednesday. We're doing this live. We're going to do this with y'all Wednesday. We'll do it live. Like, we'll talk about
when they speak,
coaches, and I want to do coaches all across every sport, not just college football. Like,
okay,
NFL coaches, women's basketball coaches. If you watch hockey and other sports, like, have at it. You can do whatever you want, Brent. I'm sure you have some stuff that you could follow and that you could do, but we'll do that on Wednesday.
Speaking of other sports, did you watch some of the basketball? Have you been watching the NBA basketball? Because I know you're a big fan of the playoffs with the NBA. Have you been watching any of that or no?
You're not.
No, I have been.
Oh,
I've watched some playoff basketball this year.
Why? What changed?
They're actually playing hard, consistently, and playing defense.
Hey, like, tell me if you think this is true, Brent. The physicality of the game is back this postseason. Like, you watch
big time.
And Ant-Man, what he did to LeBron, I'm here for all of it. Like, sign me up, bro. Like, I just – that to watch those guys, like, to watch the regular season versus now, I mean
– completely different games.
It doesn't look like the same game at all. Like, it's just totally different of how much they can obstruct their movement, and you just don't have such freedom to go to the bucket and all this space to do whatever the heck you want. And – it's a different game, and it's fantastic if you're not watching. Steph Curry's just fun. Like, just
I thoroughly enjoyed watching Game 7 with the Warriors and the Rockets. That was I enjoyed that as a sports fan, and it's kind of the one last ride, I think, for them. This might be it in terms of having any sort of potential to go anywhere or do anything. And then you got Young Guns with Edwards.
Steph Curry is a lesson for all you people that like basketball out there and that want to be a great basketball player. Listen, we can talk about his shooting. Yes, you can talk about his quickness, his ball, his movement off the ball. You can talk about his handle. You can talk about all of that creativity, all that stuff. If you want to be great at any sport, a superpower, a trait that makes you elite is conditioning. Any sport. Like, if you want to be a great basketball player, if you are a notch less at every single category, but you are in elite shape, You can be you the whole game for four quarters. You're better than 90% of people out there. Like, and I think I appreciate that with Steph. I appreciate his personality and all that stuff too. I just think he's fun. And the shooting, the deep shooting, the obscure shots that just make you go, what the heck was that? But I think the conditioning level is just, it's unbelievable. Like, just to run up and down a floor that much and not get tired. It's crazy to watch. It's fun, man. It's really fun.
All right. So one last thing that we'll end on here. Let's blend the both, basketball and college football. Did you see your team, hashtag all in, Clemson Tigers, Ian Sheflin, former Grayson High School football player turned basketball player that played hoops for Clemson, now coming out and playing tight end, 6'8", 240.
Antonio Gates.
Why the heck not, right?
Smart. Like, listen – I would argue it's easier. There's way more spots. There's 53 man rosters on NFL teams. There's 32 NFL teams. There's more teams, more roster spots. There's practice squad. There's development. Like, you're not going to be an NBA guy. Like, you have that body catching the football over the middle. Like, you can catch. We know that. Here's another thing too. Just like Jackson, the offensive lineman for Georgia, that I'll be interested to watch his career.
Jaw Jackson.
Jaw
Jackson, 6'10".
6'10", 330, 340, whatever it is. 350, few biscuits shy of 400. Like, that dude played professional basketball overseas. You know what translates? Elite feet. Like, great feet, quickness. So I promise you at 6'8", 240, he'll have feet. Now, what's the difference? Everybody's first love that plays – everybody that plays football, 80% of people that are drafted, 80% of people that are successful, their first love is basketball. I'm 100% certain of that. I've seen it because basketball's a lot more fun. It's in a cool gym. It's way less physical. It's way less hard. It's way less injury prone. So you do this when the option is not there to play basketball. And that's what a lot of players, Fred Gibson, like at Georgia, I just remember, like, go to basketball to football, like, just the difference. You got to be so much more physical and tough. So can he transition to that? And playing in high school obviously helps. That frame will help, but you also got to be willing to get your hands on people and get a little bit grimy, a little dirty, and we'll see if he's willing to do that.
Personally, same for me. Like, Friday Night Football, there was nothing like it. Like, there's nothing like that feeling and playing that game. I was the best at baseball, but in terms of, hey, you want to go play something? Let's go play hoops any day.
I played in the NFL. I played in college in the best atmospheres in the country. I've seen the best atmospheres in country. Friday Night Lights is just dope. It's just, it's with your boys, your community. Now it's changed since the days we were in high school too, but there's just something about Friday Night Lights. That's why there's a movie called Friday Night Lights and a show that's been called Friday Night Lights. But all right, thank y'all so much for listening to See Ball, Get Ball as we continue to grow and do well. Thank y'all for subscribing and liking and all that stuff that comes with it. I'm not sure what the other terms are, but I know there's more. Wednesday.
You're learning.
Wednesday, we'll be here and we'll do coaches that inspire, that you can't go past. That, and I want, Brent, I want you to find some good ones, like some good.
Okay. Oh, I got a lot of bookmarks on that.
Some off the wall, some hidden gems, because I think there's some good ones in football. There's some good ones in basketball and some different sports. And it'll be a fun topic. We'll dig in that on Wednesday. So we'll see you guys Wednesday.